Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. That time of the week again, where you get to be a little bit more comprehensive about your health. Not a show, as those of you who have listened in the past know, not a show where you just listen to what supplement causes a cure or topical explanations about diseases. It's a show where you got to think. And today we're going to discuss Alzheimer's, and if you've got any of your mind left, and hopefully you do, many don't after the age of 60, then you're going to apply that wonderful mind of yours to understanding deeper concepts about Alzheimer's. I did a show last week about Parkinson's, and I really want to talk about Alzheimer's, Parkinson's from the standpoint of neurodegenerative disease. So I think it's superfluous for people to understand Parkinson's versus Alzheimer's versus Kuru versus Jacob Creutzfeldt's disease versus premature senility. There's a whole host of neurodegenerative problems that all involve a similar process. And if you look at it that way, then no matter what your genetic slant is, you'll nip it in the bud. You see, that's the real danger here of pointing to science has just discovered the Alzheimer's genes and you're predisposed. Science has just discovered the Parkinson's genes and you're predisposed. The real faux pas there, the real mistake for the American public is that once it's looked at that way, it overlooks an underlying phenomenon. And that is, before you get Alzheimer's, genetic predisposition included, before you get Parkinson's, before you get a brain tumor, before you get some sort of senility condition, your cells were all degrading and degenerating in the same way. So today's show, you've got to deepen your understanding of what we mean by inflammation. Inflammation, whether it's from stress, inflammation, whether it's from gluten, inflammation, whether it's essential fatty acid deficiency, inflammation, whether it's what? Heavy metal exposure, pesticide exposure, anterior head carriage, torquing the midbrain. These are all going to lay down the wrong tracks for an inflammatory evolution to your neurons, your glial cells, your brain cells. And long before you ignite your specific genetic defect, you could nip these things in the bud if you thought that way. But what they've got you on is a blind goose chase in a labyrinth when they talk to you about this is what Parkinson's is caused by, and this is what Alzheimer's is caused by, and this is what just regular old age senility is caused by, and they're sending you off. The authorities, the literature, nutrition. What are we doing here? Making a claim that we should treat you different for Alzheimer's as from Parkinson's, as from just age-old senility? Here's the biggest misconception about Alzheimer's. It's called a disease of the old. And that implies that people 200 years ago were getting it, just as people today are getting it. And the only reason there's more of it is because people 200 years ago weren't living as long. And studies show that. Studies show that people 200 years ago, even people 100 years ago, were not living as long because modern medicine has cured all these terrible, terrible plagues. And so now we're all just left with cancer and Alzheimer's and a few other conditions that are only really being observed as increasing percentage-wise in older populations because you're living that long. This is an absolute crock. Now here's the proof. I'm going to give you a perspective here. As always, get to the website, straighttalk.cc, 2Ts, not.com.cc. If you're driving, I'll do the best I can. When you get home, when you get a free moment, get to the website. Can't get you to the deeper level. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. You don't cure Alzheimer's with an herb, and you don't want to take their allopathic solutions. You don't want to listen to the misconceptions about neurodegenerative disease, and they're everywhere. On the website, click to the full article on the top called The Longevity Skeptic. And I put this full article in here for you to take a look at. We're just going to browse today more deeply on your own. I numbered the pages up in the other right-hand corner. The Longevity Myth. This is one of dozens of articles like this. This isn't the first one. The Longevity Myth. Are we really living longer? Or is the head weight mostly hype? Now, there's page one. I just want you to come down here, and I'm just going to review some of the salient points so you really understand why they're saying we're living longer and we're not. Go to the bottom there of page one. I put it in parentheses. First page, page one, numbers are in the upper right-hand corner. Last paragraph, when the media and general public make causal use of the phrase life expectancy, they intend it as shorthand for life expectancy at birth. And then just come on down a little bit. However, this is the last line in that paragraph. This hardly implies that a given man who reaches the age of 75 should spend his birthday shopping for caskets. In actuary terms, a man who attains that milestone today still has a life expectancy of an additional 10 years. So understand that. If we say men are going to live to the age of 75, and because our life expectancy is 75, a man that lives to 75 then, if we're interpreting life expectancy as, well, you're 75, go out and buy a casket, we're misunderstanding what life expectancy means. Life expectancy does not mean that if you're 75, since that's the birth life expectancy, you're ready to die. It simply means if we throw in all the plagues, the pestilences, the genocides, the diseases we can't cure that are ravaging us. If we throw all of those in, we add them all up, and we look at how long then people live, we can give them a birth life expectancy. And that birth life expectancy at 1900 was lower than it is today. Now, what's the reason for that? The reason 200 years ago life expectancy was lower is because of the plagues. And you can make an argument that modern medicine has cured those. And bravo for modern medicine. I'm not going to discuss that too much today. But you have to understand the statistic. When you're hearing in 1900 or 1800, life expectancy was 40 or 50 years old for your average male, this is because of five big problems. And female. So I'll include the two for the female. One was death during birth. Maternal mortality until the 1930s was very high. Number two, you have the issue of infant mortality. Infants in China at the turn of the century, 9 out of 10 Chinese babies died within the first year. Poor hygiene, sanitation, overcrowding, not having basic medical care, tuberculosis because of poor hygiene, diabetes, pneumonia. Again, people were malnourished. Again, people didn't understand hygiene. Again, people didn't get basic medical care. So if you look at pneumonia, tuberculosis, infant mortality, maternal mortality. And then we add some of the plagues. The Spanish flu, taking out 1 out of 4 people in Europe. The smallpox epidemics, the polio epidemics, When you put them all together collectively, it's going to bring down life expectancy. And when you compare that to today, what you, of course, find is that we're living longer. Now, if you went back to 1900, if you went back there and you walked up to all the people at the age of 70 and you looked at their health and then you tracked them until they died, they're living at least as long, if not longer. And that's not consistent, then we're living longer today. And this is the point. We've got a hype and a misconception statistically when we say statistics show that life expectancy today is much longer than it was. And because it's much longer, everybody's expressing for cancer. They're expressing for Alzheimer's. That's a statistical slant. And to understand the difference between reality, I give you this article. So look at this article by yourself. Very important. Read and understand this. Now, on that basis, then, in what way have we extended life expectancy? Well, not really any. Next, you have an issue. You have an issue with oxidative stress. The amount of oxidative stress the average person is exposed to today. And again, oxidative stress, those neurons, those cells up in your brain being exposed to an infinitely higher percentage of heavy metals, of petrochemicals, of pesticides, of carcinogens we haven't even identified. The sum total of chemicals compared to 100 years ago has increased, on top of which the fertility in the soil, the fertility in food has decreased intensely. And this, if you look at the neuron, offsets the balance then between the stresses to the cells and the body's ability to repair under the stress. So if we want to understand Alzheimer's today, rather than something that's occurring simply because people are living longer, and want an answer as to why more people get it from the age of 70, it's that if you look at your average 70-year-old today, the level of oxidative stress, the level of the number of hits to those neurons, which we're going to look to in a second, from all angles, not just from what we're going to talk about today, from diabetes, from blood sugar, say, but from all hits, the cell, the neuron, can't find the countermeasure to these stresses. And when that begins to happen, the body's inflammatory response sets in, and we start laying down different types of plaques. And whether we're talking about Alzheimer's, or we're talking about Parkinson's, or we're talking about Kuru, or Jacob Creutzfeldt disease, or whether we're talking about dementia, you're talking about different responses to very fundamental levels of oxidative stress. Now, your gene may code you for a particular response, but long before we get there, we have to consider what the more fundamental driver is. Let's take a look at Alzheimer's. Go to picture number one. Picture number one. That's a neuron in Alzheimer's disease. And that's a normal neuron on the left, a non-diseased neuron. Now remember, you've got umpteen trillions of neurons in the human brain. Those neurons are conducting light. They're taking minerals in, and they're taking sugar, which we'll get to later. They're putting it into their specific cellular process, and they're flashing pulses of light down their axons. So if you look at that picture, picture number one, and you see those long, sort of like elliptical orange-yellow lines there, that's the axon. That's the fatty sheath that conducts the electrical pulse from the neuron in the brain. And you've got billions upon billions of these in the average human brain, all talking to each other in ways we don't understand. So that brain, being the sugar hog,